The urn is smaller than I expected. It's green, her favorite color, and made of aluminum. And even though it's less than a foot tall, it's heavy. Dense with her ashes, with her body, with my mother, broken down into a million crumbling pieces. It sits on a small altar at the front of the little chapel, and I can't take my eyes away from it. Even with the funeral director standing at the lectern, reading some poem I'm sure I okayed in the meeting we had a few days ago. Even with the sound of weeping behind me. The urn takes up all my vision, soaks up all the light in the room. The green is dark, the same color as the Douglas firs she loved, the color of the mossy stones in the shadows of the Columbia River Gorge. The thought makes me close my eyes tight. It's been a week since the accident. My body isn't a body anymore. It's a machine that I have to operate through force of will, pulling levers with all my might. I'm somewhere inside of it, tiny and exhausted. I have to shout to be heard from in here, and so sometimes it's easier not to speak at all. Sometimes it's easier to close my eyes and sit in stillness. But everyone seems to want something from me, and so I keep having to guide my machine body through the motions. For instance, next to me, I feel Anna Maria putting her hand on mine. She's my caseworker. She's nice enough. I don't have any family in Portland besides my mom, so Anna Maria's been helping me make all the arrangements. She helped me set up the funeral, helped me make a reservation for the flight to Anchorage tomorrow night, helped me close out mom's accounts, her credit card and the utilities and the apartment lease. She's definitely one of those people that believes in meditation and support groups and grief counseling, and she's already given me a book called Present in Loss, Surviving the Death of a Loved One Through Mindfulness. And even though I just feel numb and tired, I have to force my machine body to move yet again so that she doesn't think I'm just some kind of monster who can sit here during her own mother's funeral and stare out in space. I open my eyes and look down at my lap and let her take my hand. The room is packed, but that's only because it's such a high-profile death. The women from her office sit in a row just behind me, crying into their handkerchiefs. There are college kids in the crowd. Mom was a well-liked registrar at Reed, and a handful of my schoolmates, though I hardly know most of them. All around, I hear the quiet rustle of people shifting in their seats, craning their necks to get a glimpse of me or of the urn or of the blown-up photo on the easel at the front of the room that shows my mom, smiling her dimpled smile. Even in the midst of all these people, all these well-wishers, all I want is to talk to Zara. But she's a world away, and I'm alone and surrounded. And now, Lori's daughter Ruth will play one of Lori's favorite songs for us, says the funeral director, nodding toward me. I make my robot body get up and walk onto the dais. I don't look out into the crowd. My guitar is already set up next to a chair. I pick it up, hook the strap around my shoulder and take a breath. Then I start to play. It's an old pop ballad from the 90s, and I'm playing an instrumental arrangement. I'm not a singer, but everyone recognizes it. I can see people moving their lips to the unspoken words, "In the arms of an angel." Mom used to sing it off-key every time it came on the radio. I remember her in the little trailer where we moved after she left my dad, crooning while she did the dishes. I remember rolling my eyes at Zara as we breezed past her on the way to my room, the two of us laughing hysterically over her earnest, yearning face. I remember every part of that sun-drenched summer when I was 14, when my mom fluttered at the edge of my vision like a mildly irritating moth. When I ran free with Zara, the two of us writing stories and roaming the woods, turning our jeans into cutoffs and eating mountains of candy.